Who hasn't heard some of these speakers? Send one down to Truth and Consequences, New Mexico. I love the name of that town. Truth and Consequences, New Mexico. Wow. 877-500-5266. The KBOO News is coming up in just a moment or so. Stick around. We got lots of good stories for you. Right up. I think we do. That's why we're here. 877-500-5266. They're smiling on the other side of the window, which tells me things are looking good. We want to hear from you this afternoon. This is community radio. It's your radio. Keep it that way. On to the news.
You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. It's time for the evening news.
Come out and party. KBOO is proud to present a KBOO dance party with live salsa and Latin jazz.
Hi, I'm Nick Geffro, host of Jazz Lives on KBOO. I brought back my 9-piece salsa and Latin jazz band, Palante. We have some exciting musicians, including lead vocalist Isa Perez from Havana, Cuba. And Palante is putting on a KBOO benefit salsa dance party. Come hear us on Sunday night, October 20th, from 6:30 to 10 p.m. Celebrate with us on the big dance floor at Fontainebleau Nightclub. The club is at Northeast 3rd and Broadway in Portland.
Meet new friends and enjoy a KBOO community event with some exciting Latin flavor. That's Palante, Sunday, October 20th from 6:30 to 10 p.m. at Northeast 3rd and Broadway. More details at kboo.fm.
Global warming, it's real, it's dangerous, and it can be stopped. Next Monday on KBOO Radio, the Old Mole hosts a two-hour special starting at 8 in the morning, right after Democracy Now!, on the great promise of clean sun and wind energy to completely replace dirty fossil fuels. We have the technologies, the resources, too, and our popular movements, now embryonic to be sure, could sufficiently strengthen to overcome entrenched interests to transform this country. Next Monday at 8 a.m., an Old Mole Climate Change special report.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on our hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, the Portland Police Bureau fires an officer who shot lethal rounds out of a beanbag shotgun in 2011.
Washington State's Supreme Court rules that the governor has the right to withhold public documents.
And the last public hearing on coal export terminals in the Pacific Northwest takes place today in Tacoma, Washington.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, October 17th, 2013. KBOO is currently in our membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by calling 877-500-5266. I'm Robert Barncord.
And I'm Jen Chavez. The Portland Police Bureau has fired Officer Dane Reister following an investigation into a 2011 incident in which he mistakenly loaded live rounds into a beanbag shotgun. Officer Reister critically wounded William Monroe, then 20 years old, with four shots that fractured his pelvis, punctured several internal organs, and left a hole in his leg that severed his sciatic nerve. At the time of the incident, which occurred on June 30th, 2011, Monroe is reported to have been suffering from a bipolar episode. Police were contacted by staff of a summer camp in Lair Hill Park in southwest Portland, where Monroe was reportedly tossing picked flowers near some of the children before being asked to leave. The incident led to a $2.3 million settlement in a lawsuit brought by Monroe, as well as unprecedented criminal charges against Officer Reister, who before his firing had been on paid administrative leave. Today, I spoke with Dan Handelman of Portland Cop Watch for background and analysis of the case. The incident in question regarding fired police officer Dane Reister involved him mistakenly loading lethal rounds into a beanbag shotgun that he used to shoot and critically wound William Monroe. Aside from this error, were there any other aspects of Reister's response to Monroe's behavior that you'd deem to be inappropriate?
Well, the focus has always been that mistaken loading of the lethal rounds into the less lethal shotgun, but part of the focus should always have been, did he have the right to fire the weapon at all? Even if he had it loaded with the less lethal rounds, was Mr. Monroe actually posing any kind of an imminent threat that required Reister to fire the weapon? And it's not clear. The police bureau's news release is very short and mentions the directives that they considered to fire Reister, that he violated the unsatisfactory performance and less lethal weapons directives. So does that mean that he should not have fired the weapon at all, or that he, you know, the fact that he fired it while it had lethal rounds in it is what they're firing him for? It's unclear.
The incident for which he was fired occurred in the summer of 2011, and he's been on paid administrative leave ever since in the interim up to his recent firing. Do you know what the process of the Bureau's investigation has been and why the two-year gap?
I believe that one of the reasons, and this also is in the Bureau's news release, that one of the reasons it took so long in this case is that for the first time that we know of, in the history of the Portland Police Bureau, an on-duty officer is being charged with criminal activity for their use of force against a civilian. Now, that criminal case was moving forward, and the district attorney was trying to add an additional charge in addition to, I believe it's aggravated assault. He was trying to add some kind of charge that has to do with a hunting law that would be able to be used in case the aggravated assault charge didn't stick. And the judge basically said, you can't apply that in this case, and the DA appealed that. So I think that that question is still before the court. They're not even really moving forward with his criminal case. So I think that a lot of times Internal Affairs holds off on their investigation while criminal charges are pending.
And what have Reister's defense attorney's arguments been on his behalf in court?
That I can't tell you. I don't really have that information right here, but I'm pretty sure that his defense is that he made a mistake, he reached in the bag, it was dark, and that and I'm sure that somebody's going to come up with a complaint about him being fired and saying that it was a mistake and he shouldn't be fired for it. However, there is a history where he had, in a previous incident, used the wrong munition in the training scenario, and he also has other incidents where, in one of which he took a video camera away from a community member, Joe Anybody, who videotapes the police a lot, and then the city ended up settling with him and changing the policy about videotaping police. So it's not as though this was Officer Reister's only complaint that he ever had against him.
Union President Daryl Turner expressed concern to the Oregonian that the chief didn't consider all the appropriate factors and says that the union will be considering a course of action to potentially challenge the firing. Do you know what the avenues available to the union in this respect may be?
Well, unfortunately, this is what happened with Officer Frashauer, who killed Aaron Campbell in 2010 when he was fired. PPA filed a grievance about the outcome of that finding. It ended up in front of an arbitrator. The arbitrator said that the city had erred by firing Officer Frashauer, and they ordered the city to reinstate him. And so then late last year, Officer Frashauer was actually put back on to the police bureau, and he's now on paid administrative leave. And he also received back pay for the time that he had been fired before he was reinstated. So it is possible for the same kind of thing to happen here, where an arbitrator could rule in favor of Officer Reister. I'm certainly hoping that that doesn't happen again for the community's sake, for Mr. Monroe's sake, and for the possibility that if Mr. Reister were to put back on the force, that he could do the same thing again to somebody else, whether it's the exact same kind of injury or some other kind of result of what appears to be Officer Reister's short temper.
I've been speaking with Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch. This has been Jen Chavez for KBOO News.
KBOO volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every single evening. So now we're asking you to do the same. Joining us now is Dave to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
And good afternoon. This is our fall membership drive right here at KBOO Portland. And the news here at KBOO is put together by dozens, scores of dedicated volunteers, people like Robert and Jen and Matthew, who dedicate their time and energy to make sure that you, the listener, get the stories that you deserve when you turn on the radio, stories that you might not hear somewhere else. And you know it's true. That's why you're with us. And you know that they're volunteers, that this is a volunteer, non-commercial, non-profit organization. And you must know then that the only way it can continue is with your financial support. You're the ones that allow us to do this. Your dollars get the reporters out there on the streets with a microphone. Your dollars get the satellite linkage in here. Your dollars keep the electricity humming so the transmitter can broadcast. You're the ones that make it happen. 877-500-5266. Those are the numbers to call to make your voice heard in support of public affairs and news right here at KABU. Big thank you to Dennis in Salem and Bill and Sandy out in Aloha, who recently called in and they voiced their support for public affairs right here at KABU. We'd like to add your list to this illustrious group of people that have supported community radio. They're the ones. You know, we love to do this stuff because we think the information is valuable. Some of us are a little wonky about it once in a while, you might think. But no. Without good information, how can you be an active member of society? Without a solid background of knowledge, how can you really engage in the world? And KABU is about giving you that background so you can fully engage. 877-500-5266. Tell Robert and Jen how much you support the news. Call us up right now, 877-500-5266. We want to hear from you this very moment as to why you support community radio and why you think KABU News is invaluable to your life. Must have it. Okay? Do it. Call us now. Or if you want, you can stop by and visit us at 20 Southeast 8th. You can see the newscast in action. Okay, enough talking from you. We've got a lot of news for you. Let's go back to it right now.
In 2 weeks, the state of Oregon has managed to cut down 10% of Oregonians previously uninsured for health care. Though Cover Oregon, the new statewide health care exchange, is not yet up and running, many Oregonians new to the health care system have been enrolled through an Oregon Health Plan Fast Track program, which won federal approval this summer. Since last month, over a quarter of a million Oregonians currently receiving food stamps have been notified by the Oregon Health Authority of pre-qualification for OHP next year. Many are benefiting from a recent rise in the income cap for OHP eligibility. 56,000 of those notified in this way have confirmed enrollment, adding to the program's current enrollment numbers of around 600,000.
A group of homeless advocates, including the Vigil Outside City Hall and Right to Dream 2 Rest Area, will be attending an upcoming city council meeting to challenge the council's plan to address homelessness in the city. Mike Withey with Occupy Portland is one of the activists organizing the effort. He stopped by KABU today to give us an update.
So on the 28th of this month, we're going to attend a meeting at City Hall that's going to decide pretty much the fate of the homeless policy for the mayor here in the city of Portland for who knows how long to come. The base subject of this is going to be the $1.6 million that they've come together with to help combat what they call an epidemic of homelessness in Portland, which I agree, it is an epidemic. So what we're asking, instead of spending $1.6 million to just pay people's rent for a month and hope that they keep that place, which has proven to be a very unsuccessful way to go about ending homelessness, we're asking them to put that $1.6 million to shelters instead of paying people's rent. So as of last June, there were four vacant schools that are up for sale in the city of Portland. And once a school's closed, it becomes the property again and under the control of the city and no longer the school board. It seems to us that if you have $1.6 million and four vacant buildings with kitchens and showers and facilities enough to make a shelter, that you would take that $1.6 million and open and run shelters with it, as opposed to giving that money to landlords. We would like for people to come and attend this meeting. It's going to be at 3 o'clock on the 28th of this month, October 2013. It's going to be in the council chambers. And just let those guys know there that they should not be wasting any more money on a on a 10-year plan to end homelessness. That's obviously not working. It's in its ninth year, and homelessness is worse than ever. So if they really are serious about ending homelessness, we need to put that money where it could be used the best, which is schools, shelters. So if anybody wants to read more about this or the six-point plan to end homelessness that has a lot more of the answers, they're unconventional, and that's why they're not really being touched, you can go to the six-point plan to end homelessness on Facebook. So this is Mike Withy with Occupy Portland.
The Oregon Business Association is holding its annual Statesman Dinner right now at the Oregon Convention Center. This is a gathering at which business owners can meet with state legislators to push their priorities for the state. But labor activists have joined with teachers and students to hold a protest and a people's dinner outside the convention center to challenge the lack of public input and public decisions. The protesters argue that it should be regular people from Oregon that are sitting at the decision-making table, not corporate lobbyists. They are attempting to highlight the damaging effects of corporate influence in our state government and the detrimental effects it has over education and other public services. KBOO's Jenka Soderberg is live at the scene right now, and she joins us on the line. Hi there, Jenka. Can you tell us about what the situation is outside the convention center?
Thanks, Jen. Well, we've seen a couple of the legislators come through, and there are a number of community members out here, teachers and students, like you mentioned, and people with jobs with justice, the workers. Some of the signs are Stop Corporate Greed. There's a table set up that has a menu. It has a place setting for parents, students, and teachers, and the community menu. The cost of the dinner is priceless, according to the menu. Appetizers include funding for more teachers, smaller class sizes, teacher-designed assessments, and desserts include funding for the arts, music, and other electives. They've got a comparative menu for the Oregon Business Association, where the cost of the dinner is overpriced. Appetizers are high-stakes, standardized testing. Entrees include an austerity approach to politics, Common Core state standards, and the desserts are right-to-work legislation and charter schools. Next to me, I've got Ajamu Umi, who is a community organizer here in Portland. And Ajamu, can you tell us how you think some of the state legislative priorities are misguided?
Well, I think a lot of it is misguided. And I think the reason for that is because the power comes from the mass of the people. It comes from people getting involved and getting engaged. And so we have to build a movement. That's how you hold these political structures accountable. Otherwise, there's no methodology in which to force them to represent our interests as everyday working people.
And how do you suggest that we as Oregonians work to create that movement that you're talking about?
Well, we've got to get every woman, every man, every dog, every cat, everybody involved in an organization working for justice. I'm not going to tell you which one. There are a number of them out here. We've got to get everybody giving at least 2 to 3 hours a week to building a movement for social justice. And if we can do that, it can change the tide in this society. We can get people focused more on justice than they are on American Idol, and that's what we need to do.
And what about this menu that puts standardized testing ahead of teacher-led priorities for the classroom? What do you think about that?
Well, it's another agenda item to corporatize the society, to create conditions where the education of students, the priority in doing that is based on the ones that demonstrate the best capability to be good corporate wage slaves. And so, the corporations, the capitalist system is organized. And so we have to be organized if we're going to defeat that type of thing and make education what it's supposed to be, a methodology to create information that can solve the problems of society.
Well, thanks very much. And that's been Ajamu Umi, who is one of the community organizers, speaking at the rally that's just about to begin. It's on the north end of the convention center at Martin Luther King and Holiday. If people are interested in coming down, that's where this gathering is taking place.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Jenka. That was Jenka Soderberg, who's reporting live from the scene outside the convention center this evening.
You are listening to a membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our volunteers work hard every day to bring you this coverage of local, national, and international news, and now it's your turn. Joining us now is Dave to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Well, the first thing you can do is you can pick up your telephone and dial 877-500-5266. Those are the numbers, the magic numbers that get you over here to our membership department, 877-500-5266. We've got volunteers waiting to speak to you, and they would love to hear that you're enjoying the news right now and the kind of information you're getting, and value this and value it so much that you're willing to help pay for it. Huge thank yous to two new members, Dennis in Canby and Richard in Portland, who have said, yeah, we are listening to KABU, and by gosh and golly, we're going to help keep it on the air with our financial support. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you so much. We have just $105 to go to reach our goal for this program. Make it happen. If two people call in with a $5 a month pledge, that's $60 each. That's $120 together. That puts us over our goal for this program, a long way towards reaching our goal in this pledge drive, this membership drive. 877-500-5266. So think about why do people pledge to KABU and subscribe to KABU? Well, thousands of people listen every day, and not all of them make contributions. Somewhere around 40,000 or more people tune into KABU each week, and in the range of 10 to 15% support us financially. And somewhere along the line, it clicks. This is non-commercial radio. There's no commercials on this station. It's supported by listeners like myself who view it as kind of a subscription service, a subscription that you don't have to pay for because it'll still be on the radio whether I pay or not, but a subscription that I value and I'm willing to join. I'm willing to make that subscription and make that contribution because I want to make sure that KABU is healthy and I want to make sure it's on the air and we can get the kind of reports that Janka just gave us from this dinner that's happening. Shocking that it shouldn't be that we have these dinners with corporate lobbyists and corporate business people and our legislatures on a regular basis, and these things happen and no one bats an eye. But wait, where's the dinner for you and me? Where's the dinner for everybody else and the legislature? So we can have our concerns heard on the same one-to-one basis. I don't know. 877-500-5266. Make that call, and KABU can be a place where your ideas and your voices can be heard and can get out into the public and can get out so that they are heard and valued, and maybe some of those legislators will hear them. 877-500-5266. Those are the numbers to support community radio, to make that phone call. So what does it cost to keep KABU on the air? Well, as I mentioned earlier, it costs about $2,000 a day. And where generally does that money go? Well, you know, it goes towards our transmitter. It goes towards keeping the electricity on. It goes towards keeping the salaries of our staff so that they can keep supporting the work of the volunteers. And it looks like, I'm looking here, about over the course of a year, we spend maybe $56,000 on our transmitter and the rental of our tower. About $25,000 a year for the telephones and internet so we can do these phone interviews with people around the country so we can get internet service and get information. About $32,000 or so a year for utilities. And a good $17,000 to $20,000 a year for equipment, the repair and replacement of equipment so our reporters can go out into the field. We're able to make these payments and make these bills because you, our listeners, for over 45 years have said, yes, this is a model of broadcasting that I can support. It's community-based. It's listener-driven, listener-owned. It's volunteer-operated and built. It broadcasts information that I have a hard time finding other places, music that I enjoy, cultural offerings not easily found other places. And I understand, as a listener to this kind of a station, that for it to continue, it's on me. The ball's in my court. The ball's in your court, listeners, because your financial support is what makes it happen. Your contributions keep us strong. 877-500-5266. 877-500-5266. A quick thank you to four businesses that have supported us today with their food and their goods and services. Pine State Biscuits at 3640 Southeast Belmont. Bamboo Grove Hawaiian Grill at 0515 Southwest Carolina, Beesaw's at 2301 Northwest Xavier, and Ivory's Jazz Lounge at 1435 Northwest Flanders. These businesses, they understand the value of community radio. These are locally owned, local businesses. They understand why community radio is important. You, the listener, understand it too. That's why you're with us right now. Make your voice heard. Say, I can contribute a little bit. I can give some of my services, my goods, a little cash to keep KBOO strong. 877-500-5266. 877-500-5266.
On Wednesday, the Washington State Liquor Control Board approved the rules for the state's legal marijuana structure after a lengthy process. Beginning on November 18th, the state will start to review applications from growers, processors, and sellers of marijuana. With licenses first being made available in December, stores are expected to first open in the spring. Washington State will allow up to 334 stores, with 15 of those located in Clark County. The city of Vancouver itself received 6 spots, but the city government said it could delay the zoning process for store applications. State officials formalized a list of regulations that stores and manufacturers must follow. Stores can open from 8 a.m. to midnight every day. Each marijuana product must display its THC percentage, indicating the product's strength. Edible products will have childproof packaging. The market will dictate the legal marijuana's prices, with officials speculating that they will range from $6 to $17 per gram. The rules also stipulate customers will not be able to sample the products prior to purchase.
Right now, in Tacoma, Washington, hundreds of people are lined up to testify at the last public hearing on coal export terminals in the Northwest Pacific Coast. This is the first hearing held in a location where the loaded coal trains would not be coming through the community, but the Tacoma area would still experience many impacts from the loaded coal trains, given that the empty trains are likely to travel north through Puget Sound to then turn east through the North Cascades. A new poll shows that a majority of voters in both Washington and Oregon oppose the plans to export coal from Northwest ports. The Tacoma hearing is the fifth and the final in a series of hearings on the proposed Longview coal terminal. Of the 6 proposed coal export terminals in the Northwest, 3 remain on the table undecided: Longview, Cherry Point, and the port of Morrow, Oregon. KBOO's Jenka Soderberg spoke with Tacoma City Council member Ryan Mello, who spoke today at the hearing in opposition to the coal terminals.
What is the main reason that you're opposed to the coal export terminal?
You know, there's lots of reasons why I'm very concerned about coal export terminals. One of the most important reasons are because of the jobs lost to our economy, and that we would be faced with all of the burdens, all of the costs, and none of the upsides of this proposed coal terminal. So it's because of the impacts to our neighborhoods and to our local economy that I'm most concerned about these coal export facilities.
Now, the companies that have proposed these terminals say that they're going to provide a large number of jobs to both Washington and Oregon. Are you saying that that logic is not correct?
You know, for the small amount of jobs that may be created by shipping this coal overseas and dirtying our air, I'm very concerned about the many, many thousands of jobs that will be lost from the fishing industry, from the shellfish industry, which is very vibrant here in the South Puget Sound of Washington State, and also very concerned about decreasing our competitiveness here in the Port of Tacoma and the jobs lost with clogging up rail capacity with these coal trains and decreasing our competitiveness with the Port of Tacoma, which is one of the most trade-dependent states in the nation.
What do you think is a better direction for the Port of Tacoma and Washington to go as far as creating an export market?
You know, we have a very vibrant export market here in the Port of Tacoma. We export apples and wheat. We help export airplanes and cars and grain. We have a very, very vibrant port here. We're the fourth busiest port on the entire West Coast of the United States, and it's our job to keep that competitive. And we're trying to do that. And the more our rail capacity, which only goes so far, is clogged up, the less competitive we become, because time is money with moving cargo. And we don't want to get less competitive. We want to get more competitive. And these coal trains will make us very much less competitive.
Do you feel like that you have a lot of support for your position opposing these coal export terminals from the constituents that elected you as a city council member there in Tacoma?
Absolutely. My constituents here in the city of Tacoma, you know, they move to Tacoma and live in Tacoma because of what a great place it is to live. They move here because of our air quality, because of the beauty of Puget Sound, the beauty of our shoreline, the plentiful jobs. So, you know, we don't want to ruin that. And our property values are only going to go down because of 8 to 14 mile long dirty coal trains going by many of our waterfront communities. And, you know, we depend on those property values, those strong property values, to fund basic core services like good quality schools for our kids, like police service and fire service and medical service. If our property values drop because of impacts from these kinds of dirty coal facilities and coal trains, our community will not be as good of a place to live as it is today.
Again, I've been speaking with Tacoma City Council member Ryan Mello. If people are interested in finding out more information about the coal terminals and the movement to oppose them, the website is powerpastcoal.org. Thanks for joining us, Ryan Mello.
Thank you so much.
This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
Today, the Washington Supreme Court, in an 8-1 decision, ruled that the state's governor is allowed to withhold documents from the public. In her majority opinion, Justice Mary Fairhurst maintained that this executive privilege is necessary for the governor to make informed policy decisions. Critics claim the ruling could be damaging to government transparency and public oversight. KBOO reporter Ryan Katz spoke with senior litigator Dave Rowland from the Freedom Foundation, the organization that initially filed the suit.
First, if you could provide some background on the case.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. As far as background is concerned, this deals with the State Public Records Act. Several decades ago, Washingtonians got angry about government officials trying to hide their actions from public scrutiny. The act says, and this is a quote, "The people in delegating authority do not give their public servants the right to decide what is good for the people to know and what is not good for them to know." When Governor Gregoire was in office, a number of citizens went to her and asked for public records under the Public Records Act. Governor Gregoire said, "I have an executive privilege just because I'm governor. I don't have to give up documents if I don't want to." This is actually the exact same argument that Richard Nixon made when he was trying to cover up the Watergate scandal and didn't want to give over the recordings of his conversations in the Oval Office. Today, we found out that the majority of the Washington Supreme Court disagrees with us. In fact, the majority opinion said that although there is nothing in the Constitution that explicitly creates an executive privilege, the majority said that just creating an executive offense automatically grants the holder of the office executive privilege. The only way that can be overcome is if a citizen proves that they have some need to see the document that's more important than the governor's interest in keeping the document secret. And it's not clear from the majority's opinion how you go about demonstrating a need.
What were the original documents that the Freedom Foundation filed suit for?
It was actually a range of documents. We had requested some records having to do with the Alaskan Way Viaduct and deliberations over
in Seattle.
And deliberations over certain agreements with the tribes up here. We had asked for some documents relating to deliberations about the Seattle Supersonics. So these were the types of documents that we were asking for.
So what did the minority ruling say, and what were their justification?
The dissent was written by Justice James Johnson. Justice Johnson kind of closed out his dissent with a really pertinent quote. He said, "No nation or state ever yet found any inconvenience from too close an inspection into the conduct of its officers, but many have been brought to ruin only because the means of publicity had not been secured." And that's absolutely correct. The fact of the matter is that it is important for citizens to be able to hold their elected officials accountable. It is important for us to know not only what information an elected official is considering as they're making decisions, but who's offering that information. This idea of executive privilege cuts off citizens from being able to exercise that kind of supervision over their governor. As far as the governor's communications dealing with policy making or decision making, that sort of thing, they're saying needs to be protected. But it's not clear how the governor's office would distinguish between documents that were not used for decision making or policy making and documents that were. And what it boils down to is, whenever the government claims that a document was necessary, the courts have to take that at face value because the courts don't get to actually see the document. They have to rely on a description that the governor provides, and there's no way to double check and make sure that the description is accurate.
So what are the next steps for this case? Is it going to be appealed in any way, or is it done?
Well, there's the possibility of asking for reconsideration. We're evaluating whether we're going to try on that front. But if we don't ask for reconsideration, there's no one else to appeal to. This was decided as a matter of Washington constitutional law, and the Washington Supreme Court is the final word when it comes to questions of Washington constitutional law.
If you want to find out more information about this case or about the Freedom Foundation, you can go to their website at myfreedomfoundation.com. This is Ryan Katz with KBOO News.
Now is your chance to show support for the work our volunteers put in to bring you this newscast, rain or shine, every weekday throughout the year. Joining us now right here in the studios of KBOO is Dave to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Well, the first thing you can do, of course, is to pick up your telephone and dial 877-500-5266. Those are the magic numbers that get you in here to the KBOO membership area and department, where you can say, yes, I value the news that KBOO broadcasts each and every weekday. That's why I'm listening. I know I'm going to get stories that I'm not going to hear other places. This is my station. I want to keep it strong and on the air, so I'll support it with a little bit of money. 877-500-5266. Or you can come right down to the studios at 20 Southeast 8th, like Carolyn has done here this afternoon, and say, yeah, I'll support KBOO. I listen, and I'll become a member. Carolyn, what inspired you to stop in here today?
Well, I'm a nurse, and I am driving a lot, and I listen to KBOO all the time as I drive from house call to house call. And it really meets my need for information and for growth and for community. And I really appreciate, you know, the local news and the bluegrass and all of the music in the afternoons and the Tom Hartman show that you've got on now.
Mm-hmm.
And it just is super interesting. And I listen to it all the time, so I might as well support it.
Well, thank you very much.
You know, the real reason I came down.
I'm ready.
Is because Teresa said that if I came down, I might be able to get a Manning Snowden 2016 bumper sticker.
And we have them here.
And I got one. So
okay.
You guys should come down too. Come on down.
Come on down. 20 Southeast 8th. We're right in between Burnside and Ankeny on Southeast 8th. Carolyn, thank you again for coming in and supporting community radio today.
Thank you.
All right. And you too can come down to the station and become a KBOO member and walk out of here with a Manning Snowden 2016 bumper sticker or a KBOO bumper sticker or maybe a cool t-shirt. But the essence of it is you've got to make that step to say, this is my station. I listen, I enjoy, I value what I get here. It's my station. I want to make it strong, keep it on the air. And I can guarantee you, Carol, it's going to sound better now that you know you're a supporter and a member.
You know, It actually sounded better just coming down here while I was coming down here.
All right.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, that's 877-500-5266. The drive has been going very well. Our membership drive this fall, we're getting wonderful response from you, our listeners, because you know that KABU is what it's about. KABU is the place to get the information you're not going to find in other places. And that's why you're here, and that's why you're going to call us at 877-500-5266 and say yes to community radio and yes to the news.
You are listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KABU Evening News. We'd like to remind you once more that you can call to renew your KABU membership or become a member at any time during this program by calling that number again, 877-500-5266. Stay tuned this evening for Wisdom of the Elders at 6, bringing you wisdom, culture, and other information from Native American elders. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, featuring news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny with a high near 68 degrees. How about that? Tomorrow night will remain clear and cool down to around 44 degrees.
It's 41 minutes past 5 o'clock, time for Daily Commentary from Jim Hightower.
And now, Dr. Hightower offers this advice for improving your mental health. Don't fume about the GOP's lunatic effort to kill health care reform. Just laugh at their farcical show. Take Senator Ted Cruz's 21-hour blabathon, which he said would stop Obamacare in its tracks. Not only did he fail spectacularly, but senators voted 100-0 against his crazy ploy. Yes, that means even he voted against it. What a hoot he is! A shameful hypocrite, too. While going to extremes to keep millions of Americans from getting vitally needed health coverage, Cruz repeatedly refused to answer whether taxpayers covered his health care. Finally, he piously responded that he was eligible for taxpayer coverage, but had nobly declined. Such slapstick! It turns out that Ted was fibbing, for he's covered by his wife's policy. As a millionaire top executive at Goldman Sachs, she and her family are given gold-plated Cadillac coverage by the Wall Street giant. Goldman pays some $40,000 a year for her and Ted's policy, a benefit cost that the firm passes on to us taxpayers by deducting it from its corporate tax bill. Hilarious, huh? Then there's the comic twist that's included in Congress's current government shutdown. While more than a million regular government workers are going without a paycheck, the Congress critters who forced the furlough continue to collect their $174,000 in annual pay. Some lawmakers are donating their checks to charity, but 4 out of 5 are happily pocketing theirs. "Dang straight," barked Representative Lee Terry. "I've got a nice house and a kid in college," the Nebraska Republican said. "Giving our paycheck away when you still worked and earned it? That's just not going to fly," Terry told his constituents. This is Jim Hightower saying, and that's your Congress at work. Laugh till it hurts.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out. HightowerLowdown.org.
Indeed, last night marked the end of a multi-week government shutdown brought on by a congressional vote on a measure temporarily funding the government and raising the debt ceiling until early 2014. The shutdown had threatened a U.S. default on national debt. For more, we go to reporters with Pacifica Radio in Washington.
The U.S. government reopened today after both chambers of Congress passed a temporary funding bill and the president signed it into law. Many members of Congress made long speeches Wednesday congratulating and thanking one another for ending the 16-day-long shutdown and left the vote smiling and laughing. But Maryland Democrat Ben Cardin said there's little to celebrate, considering the shutdown cost the economy an estimated $24 billion.
A lot of damage has been done. I can show you small businesses that aren't going to reopen. I can show you people whose anxiety levels are through the roof. Our economy has been hurt. No question harm's been done. We got to repair it.
The bill funds the government through mid-January and raises the debt ceiling through early February. It also requires the House and Senate to immediately begin work on a long-term budget in a conference committee led by Washington Democrat Patty Murray and Wisconsin Republican Paul Ryan. The two had breakfast Thursday morning to kick off the negotiations, which must conclude by mid-December. Many Republicans said they hope to win further deep cuts to government spending in these negotiations, especially to support programs like Social Security and Medicare, while some Democrats say they'll push to undo some of the deep cuts already made to the nation's funding for infrastructure, education, and research. With such opposing priorities, many expressed concern that the conference would not be able to reach an agreement on a budget by its deadline, raising the threat of yet another government shutdown and debt ceiling standoff in early 2014.
I think it would be a great American tragedy if we had the same thing happen in 3 or 4 months.
That's California Democrat Dianne Feinstein. She said she hopes her colleagues are more motivated to work out their differences now, knowing this shutdown has hurt the American people more than the last one did in 1996.
17 years ago, as many people weren't working paycheck to paycheck. Mm-hmm. Secondly, now you have more families where the mother and the father must work, and the salary of one often doesn't cover the mortgage. So what we've had, particularly from California, a number of people saying, I'm not going to be able to cover my mortgage. What's going to happen to me? I've had people saying, well, I can't pay my rent. I'm going to be evicted. We shouldn't do that to people.
Because past bipartisan conferences have failed to meet their deadlines, including the 2011 Super Committee, lawmakers expressed anxiety about the prospects for this round of negotiations. But Arizona Republican John McCain said the damage to his party from the shutdown should pressure representatives to compromise.
The one thing that politicians want is approval from the people. They strongly disapprove of all of us. They just disapprove of Republicans more. So hopefully we learn the lesson not to do this.
Speaking at the White House Thursday, President Obama listed further impacts of the shutdown that his agencies have documented, including a widespread dip in consumer spending and a subsequent decision by half of all CEOs in the U.S. to put off hiring new workers.
Let's be clear. There are no winners here. These last few weeks have inflicted completely unnecessary damage on our economy. We don't know yet the full scope of the damage, but every analyst out there believes it slowed our growth.
He scolded members of Congress and urged them to work together now on a long-term budget, pass immigration reform, and hammer out a farm bill. In Washington, I'm Alice Olstein.
And now the latest news and developments
from the occupied territories in Palestine, from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Thursday, October 17th, 2013. Israeli settlers attack Palestinian farmers as troops invade West Bank communities and kidnap 4 civilians. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Two Palestinian civilians were injured on Thursday afternoon during clashes between local youth and invading Israeli troops targeting the southern West Bank town of Beit Umar. Local sources said that troops fired tear gas, rubber-coated steel bullets, and sound bombs at residents who responded by throwing rocks. Witnesses said that the clashes started when soldiers fired tear gas at residents taking part of a funeral in the town. Elsewhere, Israeli settlers attacked on Thursday morning Palestinian farmers south of the northern West Bank city of Nablus. Farmers were harvesting their olive trees when a group of armed settlers attacked them and took over their farming tools, local sources reported. According to the sources, the settlers came from Yitzhar illegal Israeli settlement near the Palestinian village of Burin. Earlier on Thursday, Israeli troops invaded several West Bank communities and kidnapped four Palestinian civilians. Israeli troops invaded the village of Ya'bud near the northern West Bank city of Jenin, searched and ransacked a number of homes, then kidnapped a teenager. Moreover, Israeli troops kidnapped three brothers near the southern West Bank city of Hebron. Local sources said that the Israeli troops stopped the car the three brothers were in near Hebron city and took them to unknown destination without giving any reasons. In other news, Israeli Peace Now movement issued a report on Israeli settlement construction and expansion activities and revealed that the settlement construction increased by 70% in the period between January and June of 2013. Peace Now said that its data is based on survey of aerial photos and count of all units that started, ended, to be built in each settlement. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Thursday, October 17, 2013, news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by George Shmawi and me, Ghassan Bannoura.
Andres Contreras, a U.S. activist, will undergo a nasal tube feeding to protest the deplorable conditions at Guantanamo Bay Prison tomorrow. The force-feeding demonstration will take place outside the U.S. District Court building in Washington, D.C., where a judge is hearing a challenge to the Obama administration policy of force-feeding prisoners. Contreras has fasted for 103 days so far, consuming nothing but water. The 52-year-old man has already demonstrated force-feeding in places like Oakland and various U.S. embassies around the world. Contreras has lost 57 pounds and says that undergoing a nasal force-feeding feels as though you are drowning. 16 men at Guantanamo are still hunger-striking and are force-fed with feeding tubes several times every day. You're listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast. We encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Ryan Katz, Genevieve McDaniel, and Ren Green. The producer is Jen Chavez. Our engineer holding everything together is Matthew Olson. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland, in Philomath on translator K282BH at 104.3 FM, and in Hood River at 91.9 FM on translator K220HR. I'm Robert Barncord.
And I'm Jen Chavez. Coming up tomorrow morning, it's News and Public Affairs Day. At 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, Ani and Lynn continue their conversation about smashing the patriarchy with feminist Cynthia Enloe about her latest book, Seriously, Investigating Crashes and Crises as If Women Mattered. At 9 on Veterans Voice, hosts Bill, Arlene, and Marvin interview Ann Jones about her new book, They Were Soldiers, How the Wounded Return from America's Wars. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. And starting at 10:15, we hear a series of recent talks, including Thomas Lindsay of the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund on the community rights movement, sustainability, and the right to local self-government. Arun Gupta of the Occupy Wall Street Journal on how Wall Street is benefiting from this week's deal in Congress. Activist and author Bill McKibben on the 350.org movement and his new book, Oil and Honey, The Education of an Unlikely Activist. Professor and author Kathleen Dean Moore on climate activism. And former British military microwave weapons experts Barry Trower on wireless technology, microwave radiation, and its biological effects. Coming up next this evening is Wisdom of the Elders, but first we go to Dave to talk about supporting people-powered community radio, the only 100% volunteer-hosted station in Oregon.
Yes, indeed, we are, and you can support us by calling 877-500-5266. That is 877-500-5266. We are so close to our goal for the newscast this afternoon. We are just $35 away from reaching our goal for this newscast. One membership for $40 takes us over the goal. That fantastic $5 a month or sustaining membership for $60 a year really skyrockets us over that goal and would help Wisdom of the Elders get started on their next program. So give us a call, make that contribution. You know, where else are you going to get Jim Hightower every afternoon on the radio? Where else are you going to get the Middle East Report? Where else are you going to hear the kinds of programming, the kinds of stories that you just got in this last hour of news on KABU? I shudder to say, nowhere else. Nowhere else. And that's why you're here. That's why you're listening. Because you know that right here at KABU is where you're going to get the information that help can make you a better actor in the world, someone more able to engage in the world around you because you have the information to help you navigate things and move things and become an active participant. 877-500-5266 is the number to call to make your voice heard in support of community radio. That's 877-500-5266. You can also visit our website, kboo.fm, to make a contribution online. And whatever you can afford is really what we're asking, not to break your bank account, because we know times can be tough. But think about, where do your dollars go? Could you afford to give up one coffee a week for community radio? You know, I don't know, what's a coffee these days? $3, $4? Could you give away one coffee a week for community radio? Put that all together, you could have a $50 membership over the course of a year or more. 877-500-5266. Tomorrow, fantastic News and Public Affairs Day. Wonderful lineup of programming available for you. But if you can't listen to all of it, you can get a 4-gigabyte audio flash drive, including speeches by many of those same people, Bill McKibben, Kathleen Dean Moore, Thomas Lindsay, and more others on this flash drive. It can be yours for a $120 KABU membership. That's $10 a month. Easily taken out of your banking account through electronic funds transfer, you can get this flash drive. So if you work a job like I do that doesn't allow you to listen to the radio all day long, so you're going to miss these programs, get the flash drive. You can listen to them anytime. You can download a couple and ship them off to your aunt in Timbuktu who can't listen to it otherwise, or someone down in a place that doesn't have a community radio station, and they can also listen to some of these programs and some of these speeches. But the first step is for you to reach deep inside and say, yeah, I listen to this program. I listen to this radio station. I want to make sure it's strong and healthy and on the air when I turn on that dial. I want KABU to be there, so I've got to be there for KABU. That's what we want you to want to hear. That's what you want. Find a way to say that to yourself and then dial 877-500-5266 and become a KABU Foundation member, a foundation supporter, a part owner of this radio station. Wonderful programs coming up for you in just a moment. Wisdom of the Elders, we're going to get into a whole different realm of culture and public affairs that we've been having the last hour, but so valuable, and another perspective on the world that we hope you stick around for, and we hope will help enlighten and enliven your life. We can only do it with your help. Volunteers produce the program. Volunteers engineer the program. Volunteers bring it to you. You help them with your financial support. 877-500-5266. Don't touch that dial. Stick around. Wisdom of the Elders coming right up.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to help sponsor the 8th Annual Northwest Indian Storytelling Festival to take place Friday and Saturday, October 18th and 19th at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday, October 20th at 1 p.m. The Friday evening event will take place at PCC Cascade, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland, and the Saturday and Sunday events will take place at the Native American Youth and Family Center, 5135 Northeast Columbia Boulevard in Portland. This year's festival features some of the Northwest's most gifted tribal tellers, tribal drumming and singing, an opening prayer, and a silent auction. This event is a benefit for the Northwest Indian Storytellers Association. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, right here in beautiful Portland, Oregon. Coming right up, Wisdom of the Elders.
Welcome to Wisdom of the Elders, featuring the stories and songs of elders from the Native Nations who lived and still live along the Lewis and Clark Trail. I'm Arlie Neskai of the Diné Nation. In the next hour, we'll meet Mandan Elder Edwin Benson, take a walk in a Hidatsa garden, and listen to some Hidatsa music. We'll meet flute player Keith Bear and hear the story of Cherry Necklace, the Hidatsa medicine man who received his power from the snake.
He had the ability to heal arrow wounds and gunshot wounds. He had the ability to fix broken things.
This is Wisdom of the Elders. Stay with us. This is Papa John and Daniel performing Breath of Fire from the album Visions and Rhythms, Volume 2 on the Natural Visions label.